Oh, hello, I didn't see you there. This is Dr. Thaddeus Venture, and you're listening to the Long Box Guys. Whatever that means. On the road.
The Long Box Guys gonna do tonight, Brain?
The same thing the Long Box Guys do every night, Pinky. Drink and talk about comics. They're useless at taking over the world. Yes.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Long Box Guys. With me, as always, are some of my very favorite people on the planet Earth. Tommy, how you doing? And what are you drinking tonight?
I am drinking some Johnny Walker Blender's Batch. I'm a little tired tonight, but I'm doing okay. How are you doing, Tommy? What are you drinking?
I'm doing great. By the way, where's Johnny Walker brewed?
It is brewed. Distilled? It is distilled in Scotland.
Beautiful like Scotland. All good scotch.
You mean whiskey.
Right. I'm doing great. I'm drinking, what am I drinking? Oh, Thompson's Water Seal. My favorite $9 bottle of scotch because I am still...
Is it actual scotch, Tom? Did you
care? Is not...
Does it come from Kentucky?
It is not actual scotch. It is actually... just brown. They just call it Kentucky. They just call it brown.
Does it come from somewhere other than Kentucky, Tom?
It does.
Good.
And I think it's like New Haven, Connecticut. Josh, how you doing? What are you drinking? You're drinking probably the best stuff here.
I'm probably not. I went out today and just got a little varietal of beers. I am trying an Ascent New England IPA from... Battery Steel Brewing out of Portland, Maine, and it is it's okay. It's just okay. Right.
By the way, if you come across any of the 26.5 beer, the one that they make for the Boston Marathon every year, grab it up for my wife. I've been looking for it, but they didn't make one yet because they postponed it. It's her favorite beer. Mikey, what are you up to, and what are you drinking, babe, pal?
I am drinking a blonde ale from Firestone Walker Brewing Company called 805.
805. That's a fun number. You know what else is a fun number? 198. Speaking of the number 198, a little segue there. We're going to be talking about the House of M and the 198. Mike, you want to give us a little background on that?
Well, of course, and the reason we're doing it, because this is our 198th episode.
Woohoo!
That is not counting all the other special episodes that we've done. Yeah. This is the official 198, baby.
Official.
Wait, I thought the Angel episode.
Shut up. That's our best episode. That's not our 198th episode. This is our 198th episode.
This is okay. 198.
And I will say that when we go to talk about the 198, we actually have to set the backdrop. So let's talk about mutants in the Marvel Universe. They have always been the class of people who are the outsiders. And as a result, just about everybody can kind of see themselves as mutants, as somebody on the outside from whatever the norm is, making it great. And because, like all minorities, they get persecuted, there have been escalations of violence against the mutants. So mutants, depending on what they looked like, some of them were driven under the streets of New York, and they were called Morlocks. And they just, because of their mutation, they didn't feel comfortable being out in normal society. So they said, the heck with it, we'll form our own society. And that was going great until the Reavers. Or no, the Marauders.
The Marauders.
Me. Yeah. Yeah. Josh, you want to tell us about the Mutant Massacre real quick?
Yeah,
one
sure.
of Josh's faves.
It's my fave and the beginning of the end for me. So in 86, Marvel starts a giant crossover. I mean, not giant in today's standards, but then a giant crossover between X-Men, X-Factor, Thor, New Mutants, Power Pack, and one issue of Daredevil for about 13 or 15 issues, in which case an arch-villain, a mysterious backdrop of Mr. Sinister, who we don't know what he's doing or what his motivation is, he pulls together a group called the Marauders as hired hired assassins to start killing mutants, mostly starting with the Morlocks. It was really an impactful series because of the amount of comics it touched. It was the first sort of series that showed us that there was an order to read comics in, and they actually laid out a map for you to read which comic in which order. And it had a lot of consequences. It was one of the first comic series, these big crossovers that left an indelible mark on the world as it passed by. I mean, little things like – I mean, not little things. Like Angel loses his wings, Shadow Cat, Kitty Pryde gets stuck in her form. Colossus is revealed that even in his metal form, he is subject to pain and damage and has to be healed by Magneto. There's probably six or seven of the Marauders are killed off in permanent fashion out of the world to show that this is something that is a dangerous world the X-Men live in, and they wanted to show that in a way that there was this sort of ongoing impact of a major crossover. And it's Claremont and Simonson really just digging into the entire X-Men team and sort of the world they live in, and showing us that mutants are really living in a dangerous world, and at any time they can be killed, and the world is not going to back them up. So they have to turn inward, look to themselves, form new bonds, create new leaders like Storm, and carry on in the X-Men tradition. Probably one of the single best moments in comic history and writing for me is The Mutant Massacre, even though I have to read Power Pack to do it.
And of course, one of your favorite lines of all time, you want to say it?
Oh yeah, make peace with my gods, little man. You are next. The first time we see Colossus kill, he knows Kitty Pryde is in mortal danger. He's in love with her, and Riptide comes at him, and Colossus just grabs dear old Riptide by his pretty little neck and snaps it like a twig.
I think he just lets Riptide just keep rotating.
Yeah.
Like, he just chickens him.
Just stops.
And the fun Alex fact that we learned, the reason that you had to read Thor and Power Pack and everything else is because Walt Simonson and Louise Simonson were writing the other comics, and they were like, hey, can we join? And Chris Claremont was like, yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah, everybody in the boat.
Did not realize the monster he was creating.
But the world-changing monster he created.
Yes. Yeah. But Claremont, from there, he continues to write, and he is very socially conscious. So the next step in the evolution of talking about mutants being mistreated goes right into what's effectively mutant apartheid, right? Genosha. Can one of you guys talk about Genosha real quick? Or I will.
I mean, yeah, I'll just go. Let me just throw it. No, go ahead. I'll throw this in at the end. It's awful.
So Genosha is a island off of the coast of Madagascar, just north of Madagascar, off the coast of Africa. And
second time Madagascar's come up as the final solution.
Josh. That was my story, yeah.
It's got the highest standard of living. It's got an excellent economy, but it is actually being based upon the subjugation of mutants. And there is a whole X-Men storyline where they find out that and it's all a reflection of South Africa's apartheid, but the island eventually becomes a mutant haven under the leadership of Magneto. And during that time when Magneto, the United Nations has recognized it as a mutant nation. And because they have done that, it makes it a target for Cassandra Nova, right? Who does the Genosian massacre. They take over Sentinels. They attack the island, and 2 million mutants or something like that are wiped out. And that is, again, they're reflecting a version of the Holocaust for the mutants in that storyline. Like, oh, holy shit, look at what happened and the rest of the world just kind of watched. And it's not just, you know, reflective of the Holocaust. We, at the same time, we were seeing ethnic cleansing going on between the Hutus and Tutsis in Africa. So there was a lot of real-world relevance going on with that, which leads us to the House of M, which is the next really big thing. And to set it up, we're going to let LT tell us quickly about the House of M. But before we do that, you have to understand Brian Michael Bendis was the writer. And he had just been, along with Geoff Johns, decimated the Avengers with the help of the Scarlet Witch going insane, which leads directly to Bendis going, well, if she can fuck with the Avengers and destroy them, imagine what she can do to the mutants. And LT, what's the House of M?
So House of M starts with the Avengers getting together with Doctor Strange and Charles Xavier, and they're meeting to decide what to do with Wanda Maximoff because she has gone insane and Charles Xavier is getting to the point where he can no longer contain her. And Doctor Strange has gotten to the point where he doesn't think he can find a solution anytime soon to heal her of her insane proclivities. And so they're trying to figure out what to do with Wanda Maximoff because she is incredibly dangerous and she has decimated the Avengers. And at this point, Wanda's brother, Pietro, runs to Magneto and says, they're going to kill her. We have to do something. They're going to kill my sister. And at that point, reality changes and House of M happens. And House of M is everything that Magneto ever wanted in the world. Mutants have taken their quote-unquote rightful place as Homo Superior, and they're in charge, and they're the majority, and Homo Sapien is the minority, and they're the second-class citizens. And even though Magneto on some level wants to live in harmony with Homo Sapiens, he is very comfortable with Homo Superior being the superior in that equation. And it is all about the story of the Sapiens trying to stay alive in their being persecuted by mutants, in the sort of being the outcast, what the X-Men were, what the mutants were, are now being experienced by the Sapiens and being looked down upon and kind of fighting for scraps and being persecuted and destroyed at will. And one day Wolverine wakes up and realizes this isn't his reality and just kind of quits that reality and tries to find out what's going on because he knows it's not real. And it's all about Wolverine tracking down his reality, coming across a mutant girl named Layla that also knows it's not the true reality. And with her help, they bring everybody back to the memories of the old reality and start unwinding what Wanda has done.
And you realize you're going slower and slower as you go on, right? It's not just me hearing this.
And that is where the end of House of M comes to, in that they finally get to Wanda and they have a big battle where Doctor Strange confronts Wanda and she realizes that the problem maybe isn't that she tried to give everybody what they wanted, but it wasn't true. And so she tries to do something different. She figures that maybe mutants are the problem. And so she tries to get rid of all the mutants, which brings you to 198.
Which are the single phrase, no more mutants causes decimation, or also known as M-Day, where every mutant, most every mutant on the planet loses their powers. They estimate somewhere along 2 million or so mutants get depowered at that moment, leaving only a scant handful. The 198 comes into play because that is the list of mutants that the U.S. government has in their possession, saying, okay, we know about these 198 mutants. They don't they suspect there are more mutants, but this is their list. And mutants have become an endangered species. And so what happens when something becomes an endangered species? The U.S. government is there to help. Unfortunately, that is not what ends up happening. Because all these mutants have lost their powers, all these hate groups that have existed for a while are all of a sudden realizing, hey, you know, we always hated these mutants, and now they don't have powers. But to us, they're still mutants.
Let's go kill the blob.
Let's go kill these guys because they don't have powers anymore. And I can't state how decimation actually affected a lot of mutants. Some of them were actually using their powers when it happened. Magma and her boyfriend were inside a volcano when the wave hit, and he loses his power to be immune to fire and burns right in front of Magma, and she doesn't even realize what's going on until after it happens. There were a lot of mutants who had physically changed because of their mutation, and now they're left even deformed because of those mutations that happened, and some just go back to being normal. It varies depending on what the writer wants. But the storyline itself centers on the Xavier Academy, because all of these hate groups are coming out. Mutants start going to the Xavier Academy for gifted youngsters, so that way they don't have to worry about getting killed by these groups. And the government says, we are going to protect mutant kind. And the U.S. government puts sentinels right outside of Xavier School. Now, these sentinels aren't like the other sentinels that have been known to kill mutants and were specifically designed to hunt down and kill mutants. These sentinels are operated by humans, so there's less of a chance of something going wrong. However, things do go
wrong. Something goes wrong.
Valerie Cooper, who was one of the main the government liaison for X Factor for a number of years, steps in because she has a relationship with the mutants and is going to represent the U.S. government, and says, hey, I'm here to help. What do you guys need? You guys need protection. We're here to protect you. Well, a lot of mutants don't like the fact that there are sentinels outside, and they're like, we want to leave. So the government's response is, of course you can leave. You're not prisoners here, but we want to protect you. And the only way we can protect you is if we follow you when you leave. And they're like, oh, no, that's not freedom. And they're like, okay, well, how about this? Here's my compromise. LTD?
Well, I mean, you're forgetting that in addition to actually wanting to follow them, they also tag them.
Right. So this is their compromise. Rather than following them, they say, we'll give you a cell phone, and in case you need help, you call us. Oh, and we need to tag you also, so that way if something bad happens, we know exactly where you are and we can get to you.
All we're going to do is put this one little tattoo on your forearm that matches a cell phone, and you're free to go.
Put this subcutaneous tag inside your neck, and it's just going to locate you. It's just GPS, just we know who you are.
We've nicknamed it the Yellow Star.
Yeah.
Ugh, Josh, come on, we get it. You're Jewish. Ugh.
So a few of the mutants decide, okay, we're ready to leave.
Allegories.
And they leave. And while they're out of the academy and walking around, one of the mutants gets confronted by a racist. And this mutant looks like an elephant. an Elephant Man combination. And he goes and grabs the guy and is ready to kick the guy's ass. And his surveillance team says, oh, shit, he's going to hurt someone. And they activate the chip, which causes an electric shock to jolt the guy to keep him from beating this this racist up. And as a result, they're like, holy shit, not only do they tag us, they can now control us. And they're watching what we do at all times. This is bullshit. At the same time, there's another evil mutant who's working for an evil person with the government. And he kills one of the mutants. Well, the mutants don't understand. They don't make the correlation. They're being told by the government. See if you can recognize any allegory here. They're being told by the government that they have to stay inside the mansion. Otherwise, bad things could happen to them. And then they go out and find, okay, not only did I get zapped, but this other guy's dead. And so rather than trying to figure out why he was dead and what killed him, they just assume the government killed this guy. So now the government has all these trackers in our head and they can kill us whenever they want. That is the 198 in a nutshell. It is in a good storytelling sense, you have to have a person trying to do good. And because of their decisions that they make, it makes things worse, but they're doing what they think is morally correct, which leads them to their next decision. It's really great storytelling, although LT and Tom probably don't agree with me.
So the problem that I had with the book was that they have a character named Mr. M who can manipulate matter and reality, and he just magically takes care of the issues. He's able to pull the trackers out of people's heads. He's able to bring the people out of the grounds of the mansion without having the sentinels really be able to affect them. Instead of resolving the issues, they basically, as Josh likes to phrase it, magic their way out of the situation.
And here's what
That's sloppy writing. That's the taking the easy way out in writing.
But here's where I'm going to differ with you, because I say, no, the whole character becomes a messiah for the mutants. Here's an Omega level mutant who is saying no to all these people who feel disenfranchised and says, follow me and I will lead you out of here. And he can stop the Sentinels from doing everything. When the X-Men go to confront him and they're like, hey, look, just calm down, let's talk about everything, he's like, no, I'm protecting my people. They kind of give it almost a religious feel to the storyline, which is understandable. Here are these mutants who believe that they are trapped in this one guy who is all powerful, is able to lead them out of where they feel trapped into the world. And not only that, he's so powerful, he could actually warp reality to make it so that nobody hates mutants, which we all know is not going to be a good thing, because every time you try to do something good, it makes it worse. So his ultimate death and then rebirth as butterflies is a great storyline for this character, even though he was pretty much the MacGuffin for the 198 series. But the fact that he was acting as a messiah sets up the next big X-Men series, which is Messiah. It's a prelude to it.
Prelude to Messiah.
Tom, did you have any comments?
I did want to just mention that this is very much like a couple of different times this ventures into Ursula K. Le Guin's The Lathe of Heaven. We've all read that in college, right? The Lathe of Heaven?
Nope.
A guy goes to sleep every single night, and whatever he dreams and whatever he wants and desires comes true. So he goes to a psychologist, and they start having him dream certain ways to change the world. But every time he changes the world, he changes it and something terrible happens. Say he wants there to be less violence on the street. boom, coronavirus happens and we're all stuck inside. Or he wants there to be no violence on the planet and aliens come and take away all our weapons. So if you read The Lathe of Heaven, you'll see a lot of bits like that interwoven in there. And I just wanted to toss that out there because it makes me sound smart, quite frankly.
I do recall that novel, actually, now that it's actually – that's novella or short story, right?
I would say novella. It's not quite a novel, not quite a little bit too long of a short story.
I do remember reading it now that you now you put that out there. I would be super hard-pressed to say that anything by Ursula Le Guin is required reading in any university anywhere.
Really?
Don't get – yeah, really.
Be the Trees?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
I would say that's a far cry from required reading from anywhere, unless you actually have a sci-fi class. But I'm not sure that's a wide.
A feast unknown. No. Come on.
Absolutely fucking not. No.
All right.
I'm just saying, probably not. In the grand scheme of things, probably not.
Agree to disagree.
No, that's something we can. It's a hard fact we can look up, and it's not a.
Wait, that's a hard fact. Are you telling me right now I can't find any college course where Ursula K. Le Guin is required reading?
You said every college.
You can find a college course.
I know I can.
But I'm saying it's definitely not ubiquitous, and that's something that's pretty easy to find out. You said it was. Like, everyone who ever went to college took a literary class had to read Ursula K. Le Guin, which is definitely not.
I had to read The Left Hand of Darkness in college.
There you go.
Yeah. What class?
Fuck if I know. It was a comparative literature class.
Okay. Maybe. Anyway, side note, that's not the fight I'm fighting here. I never really read the storyline that you.
No,
guys
you
are.
Die on that hill.
I will die on that hill, but it's still a hill three hills away from the hill I'm about to die on. So whatever. I didn't really read the sort of the modern the 198 the whole storyline with Scarlet Witch was sort of in that dark period where I was like, I'm not going to read this shit.
Well, that's because you got burned by the Mutant Master so bad.
That's precisely it. And I made it way into Genosha, and I loved Genosha. And I was just perusing a couple things, Mike, and it was 16 million.
16 mutants. Million, oh, sorry.
16 million mutants in Genosha get eliminated, which is oddly similar to some World War II statistics.
quick side, do we know why the 198 was immune? I never figured that out.
Well, in House of M, the White Witch or whatever from the Hellfire Club. Emma Frost, who was shagging Scott Summers. She tried to stop Wanda, but she didn't act in time.
So she saved a few. Okay,
implies that she saved a few.
Okay.
I can explain exactly because Marvel is like, X-Men is our best-selling fucking comic book. You are not getting rid of
Wolverine. Yeah.
It's not like this is the Fantastic Four and we don't own the movie rights. We are going to stick with this, even though we don't own the movie rights.
From a marketing and story-driven perspective, that's a good shot to take, right? Like, to take everything you've had that's been sort of a cluttered mess for decades at this point and say, you know what? I'm going to narrow this down to less than 200 people as my focus on what our stories are – who our stories are told about, right? Those 200 characters are now what we have to work with and go forth and march – take those marching orders and go. And if they kept it. And it brings it back around to being like – oh, so we are sort of this extremely magnified minority in the world, and there's only so much of us, and we can only do so much. Like, when you think about – even when you gaze back at Genosha, 16 million, right? And then if you sort of took like world mutant populations at the time and extrapolate that across, right, there were probably like 60 or 80 million mutants. It sort of starts to like take that thing and just sort of dissolve it out into the world where it's just too ubiquitous. Like people couldn't ignore them. And so like reeling that back into something that's sort of laser focused gives both the writers and the storytellers something to be like, oh, we are so magnified compared to everything else that's going on in the world. Where before there were probably more freaking mutants than Hindis at the world at this point, like at the end of the day. Like what are we talking here? Like,
well, at least they had a chance of being reborn as one.
Right, seriously, yeah.
So one of the key things about the decimation is it totally changes Scott Summers, Cyclops. And I know you guys are not fans because you did not read this series like I did when it was coming out. And his character is forced to change significantly because of the decimation, because Xavier disappears. After M-Day, Emma Frost and Scott Summers are left with the responsibility to take care of pretty much the entire race of mutantdom, and Xavier's gone. They don't know where he is. And Scott Summers is now, I feel responsible for my entire race, for the safety of my entire race, and to make sure, I don't even know if any other mutants can be born after what just happened. The ones that are remaining, we might be the only ones. And that drives him down a road to becoming more and more extreme in order to protect his people. That's why he creates Utopia right off of San Francisco and declares it its own sovereign nation and tells everyone, all mutants are welcome here, but if any of you ever try to fuck with us, we will mess you up in a way that you will never recover from. That's why he has to do that. And when later on, I know I've spent an hour before ranting about how Scott Summers is awesome. When later
on, turns Scott Summers from a douche to a super dick.
You just don't understand the man. Cyclops is right, buddy.
Yeah. He is right. If you are down to the last 190 people of your kind, right? You've left the humpback whale in the fucking dust. Right? There's 400 of those motherfuckers, and lobster guys can't even use line traps anymore. Scott Summers is trying to save the world, his mind, his people, and it's like I said, it turns that storyline into a laser focus rather than the broader allegory it was before, and it lets people make stories that are way more close than what they were looking at before, because the mutant kind had sort of become too ubiquitous in the Marvel universe, where it was diffuse, it was a population, not a fight anymore.
They had mutant pride parades.
Yeah, mutant pride parades. Yeah, I mean it's not that it was a bad allegory coming out, but it got washed away in such a way that the writers had a harder time making the stories poignant, and that's what it did. It turned it back so that there was a laser focus on things that you want to illuminate in a way that is brighter than what's going on in the real world.
You know, one thing that it kind of reminded me of was the Watchdog series. You guys remember the Watchdog? There was this crazy supervillain that went around killing off all these minor supervillains. And he killed off the Ringer and Javelin and like all these Polka Dot Man and all these crazy, you know, Marvel superheroes. There were just too many Marvel supervillains, low-level supervillains walking around the streets. So they had this Watchdog group come out and just kill hundreds of them. And when one of the Watchdogs was – when the Watchdog was finally revealed, Captain America is like, I don't know you. And he goes, what, do you think I was going to be your evil twin? I'm just a racist asshole. It was terrific. And so they kill off just tons and tons of these like Steeplejack, one of my favorite stupid supervillains, gets killed off by this guy. It's a real fun run, but it does take care of all these crazy little tiny powered supervillains running around that Spider-Man beat up every other week.
Did they ever kill off Razorback?
No, Razorback is living the high life in outer space right now. I should know. I, like my good friend Mike, have gone in a deep dive, and I've collected everything that Razorback has ever appeared on, except there's a couple of She-Hulks I don't have, where he's hanging around in the background and doing stuff. Love me some Razorback. Buford T. Busser.
But yeah, I mean, it's like death comes for us all. Death comes for everyone. You know, it's just sort of the and you know you pointed out that we've mentioned this in other podcasts, but like Genosha, even while it's dancing with apartheid, it's a direct allegory for the final solution, right? Yeah. So the final solution was. Yeah, bringing everyone to Madagascar, literally bringing every Jew to Madagascar. So, and the numbers match. It was very. All these things have done a very. All the writers over the years, especially Claremont, has done a fantastic job of bringing along the real world, especially for a generation that didn't see it, right? And I often talk about like the one statistic that truly makes me feel old in this world is that in 1973, I was born. For everyone who wants to know how exactly much of an old guy I am, I'm the youngest long box guy. Fuck you guys. And in 1945, right, it's 28 years before I was born. It's the end of World War II. And so if you're a kid listening to this podcast, if you're a person out there living in the world, and you were born in 2005, you are more removed from the original Star Wars film than I was from World War II, right? So growing up, I always thought of World War II as ancient history, right? It's in black and white. It would seem the thing that happened generations ago that wouldn't really affect me in the real world. And if and now I think of kids today who are right now getting their driver's license – that is how they viewed the original Star Wars movie. That's the distance, the distance of time. And Claremont and everyone in Marvel, as they write these things, bring distant memories to us in recent four-color pictures and eight panels to help us understand what we've lost and where we've been. It's a really a great thing. This is a great topic, Mike. Like, you fucking nailed this one, I got to say. Like this is what really what comics does for a generation that we don't. It's not that big, Tom. I've seen Mike in the shower, but it's fucking fantastic.
Wait, are we still talking about the topic or my penis?
I don't know. I can't tell anymore. It's all,
they're both fucking fantastic, so that's both all right.
Fucking fantastic. So,
whatever. And Chris Claremont has written about both of them.
And once again, when we're talking about the X-Men, when we're talking about mutants, the mutants, one of the great things about it is, Josh, you see this allegory almost perfectly as the Jewish experience during World War II, and that's great because there's a lot to mine there. But my good friend Alex, who loves comic books, also sees this more as a gay issue, and that's what he takes from it. So when the mutants started having a pride parades and stuff, he saw that more as his issue. Now when it comes to there being sanctuary cities, I have friends who are immigrants who are not with perfectly legal status, who see this as their issue. And that's the brilliance of this entire thing.
Yeah, it's a backpack that everyone can put on and follow from generation and issue to issue. And that's what really the writers are really doing a fantastic job of. The fact that we talk about all these things in a line, right? The massacre, Genosha, all these things – they carried all that weight for everyone. And at the same time, we all had a chance to think about the past and our ancestors, our parents, our grandparents, what happened, what's happening today, and what's going to happen tomorrow. it's been a fantastic allegory for all of us in every situation. And the writers and Marvel have really done a great job of putting it on their backs and carrying it forward to people who needed to hear it.
I often think, as I'm reading this comic book, what do white supremacists get out of this? I mean, they must like X-Men. I mean, there can't be no white supremacists who don't love X-Men.
They're in there.
They're just not portrayed very well.
Hey, Tom.
What?
They're called purity?
No. He's saying he's talking about white supremacists who are a fan of the X-Men, and what pane of glass do they look through to find the relativism that they want in their own belief system? And unfortunately, I must imagine that there is one, right? There are bad fans, right? There are people who think they are oppressed when they aren't. And honestly, I don't want to put too much thought into it.
Yeah. Well,
I think we could all think of it. We could all find that lens.
What's the number one recruiting film for ISIS? Star Wars is hugely popular in the Middle East because there's an evil empire with scrappy rebels fighting them.
It's
pretty straightforward when you really take a look at it culturally. Who's who in this one?
And that's not a big stretch.
And I think if you're talking about somebody who feels disenfranchised because they are the majority, but they are becoming the minority, that's where they can actually see themselves, right? Before, you know, everything was great, right? And now, because of whatever, now I am the disenfranchised, so I am the one looking on the outside because, you know, I just happen to be a white male in this society. I'm not saying that as my belief, but I'm just trying to get into their head and how they could adopt this. Like, yeah, I am the other. I am the one who's being oppressed.
Yeah, there's the burning.
There's not a lot of self-awareness,
of racism,
right?
Yeah,
true.
Yeah, there's I don't know how racism works.
And we don't make it that easy either. I mean, if I see a guy wearing a Trump hat talking loudly in a restaurant, I kind of want to fuck with him a little bit. I try not to. I kind of want
to. I don't try that hard.
I try. Doesn't do any good. All right, so we're striving for good.
Not the top of my chart, really.
I'm trying my best. Come on, man. Everyone can be brought around. I still got a couple right-wing friends that I still believe I can help. And I see it sometimes. I have brought a few people around on small issues. There's more we're closer on a lot of issues than a lot of people think, even with the most hardcore Trumpster. Sorry, but I believe that because we can help everybody.
Sure.
Meet me in the middle, guys.
Good luck with that segue.
Yeah.
There is no good segue. I was off on a tangent. Speaking of tangents, Josh, you got a tangent for us, buddy?
I do have a tangent. So picture yourself.
On a boat in a river?
In a boat. Not in a river. So the thing is, one of your favorite movies, you can be in that film for one line. You get to add one minute appearance and say one line in that film. It doesn't change the outcome of the film. It doesn't change the plot. It does nothing. You get one distinctive line in a film, and that is it. Where are you? What film are you in? And what is your line go?
I am in Hudson Hawk. I am driving the car, and I say, thank God I had these airbags and fire extinguishers installed.
Can you believe it?
I can believe it.
I'll give you mine.
That's right.
I'm walking down a hallway. It's in a hotel. It's Ghostbusters. Venkman's on the floor. He's just been slimed. I pass by very casually. I look at him and say, if you keep doing that, you're going to go blind.
Nice. Love it. Love everything about that. All right. End of Star Wars. Everyone's on stick.
There's a lot of Star Wars. You're confusing our listeners. We talked about generations. You need specificity here. Nobody likes ambiguity, Tom.
It's the end of A New Hope.
Thank you.
Everyone's on stage getting medals.
Uh-huh.
Chewbacca gets passed over, and I go, "What the fuck?" And I walk off pissed.
Totally fair. Totally fair. I'll take that. LT, what do you got?
You know, I think I'm going to also have to go with a Star Wars movie. I think I'm going to have to go with I believe it's the second Star Wars movie of the prequels, Attack of the Clones, where Anakin has just, or is it the Phantom Menace, whatever, Anakin has just killed all of the Tusken Raiders, and he comes back to Padme, and he tells her, "I've killed them all, even the younglings." I think I'd walk back in and be like, "You love this guy? He just murdered the town. You love this guy?
You know, this really? Is not a good guy.
This is not a good guy.
Oh, no, no, be the, no, 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 be the wedding planner. No, dude, hear me out.
Alexei.
You're standing there. Your message is all the fuck up. You're fucking idiot.
I want to tell you this. Planner. Your mom had picked up this nice guy back in Naboo.
Shut up.
Son of this other guy. You want this guy, really?
That's right. Lilies are pink roses.
That's more than one line, by the way.
More than one line.
You should just be the wedding planner holding a big book of the wedding plans and go, "Fuck this." Walk out.
I will have to say, better off dead when John Cusack is in the back of the garbage truck. And the guy says, "Now that's a shame when people be throwing away a perfectly good white boy like that." I like them to pan over to me holding LT over the bridge and going, "Do you want him?"
I get one. You want this one? It's a good one.
Oh, good. Nice. Those are all good. Those are all gold.
Good. Comedy gold.
All right. The end of Rogue, right? And we see Vader coming. Vader's coming. And the door's shut. He's killed like 9 people. And I turn to a guy and go, "Well, that's Vader."
Okay, best one yet. I'm all in. All in on you doing that line.
Well, that's Vader.
Well, that's Vader. Okay, yeah, that's a good one.
Thank you.
That's a good one. It took a couple iterations. I get it wasn't your first instinct. I'm taking it anyway. So I'm all in on that fucking line.
Anyone else got a secondary?
No. No, just keep going.
Mikey, what you got at the front of the long box, buddy?
At the front of the long box today, I'm going to go all the way to Holyoke, Massachusetts.
What?
Holyoke.
I'm not going to talk about a specific comic book. Instead, I'm going to talk about the Holyoke Publishing Company, which was a comic book publisher that operated in Holyoke, Springfield, and New York. Those of us who grew up in Western Mass knew the Sunday Republican, that newspaper line. They used to publish comic books, and they had quite a few notable characters, which we should probably do an entire podcast on. But in addition to creating their own characters, like Miss Victory and one of my favorites, Catman and Kitten, they also, when Fox was going out of business and declared bankruptcy, they bought some of the rights for in bankruptcy court to the Blue Beetle. And they published a lot of the Dan Garrett Blue Beetle stories back in the 1940s. They were around from 1941 and eventually went under in 1948. They had, when superheroes went out of fashion, they tried to switch over to horror and war stories, but it just wasn't working. They were one of the first to get Simon and Kirby, who did a couple issues of I think they were Solar Rangers or somebody like that. So all good stuff, but my favorite character of the lot was the Black Venus. And she was a Parisian dancer slash nightclub girl whose boyfriend ends up getting killed by the Japanese at the embassy in Paris. And she decides, screw this. She dresses up in all black leather and starts to extract her sworn vengeance against the Axis power, where she flies to the South Pacific and as a dominatrix fights for on the side of the Allies. It is it's kind of weird, but in a really good way. She is a very powerful, dominating superhero, female superhero lead. And there weren't a lot of female superheroes who could carry their own book at that time. And Contact Comics, starring Black Venus, is definitely one of them. And Miss Victory, of course, was along the same line as all the other, you know, star-spangled heroes that they had. She appeared in Captain Fearless. And Catman and Kitten is great. They were like, hey, you like Batman and Robin? You like Tarzan? I got a comic book for you.
How about if I take the worst parts of all of that?
And combine them, yeah.
And combine them, yeah. Let me ask you a quick question, Mikey. Why did that come up on you? Why were you thinking about that this week? And I only ask that because I just saw an article about Holyoke Publishing this week, and I started doing a little research on it myself. Was it like, is it the anniversary or something? Is there a reason it came up?
No, actually, it's kind of weird. I was looking up Catman.
As well you would.
The DC supervillain. And I came across something about the Golden Age Catman, and I was like, which is spelled cat hyphen man. And I'm like, who's this? And so I went down that rabbit hole, and then I saw that he was published by Holyoke Publishing, and I'm like, no way. And that's when I went down the other rabbit hole.
Guys, there's so many rabbit holes to fall into. God damn it.
And you know, and I'm afraid of rabbits, too. It's so weird.
We know. Terrifying. Terrifying. Way to bring it around. Tommy, what do you have the back of the love box for me, friend?
So I've got a book that was kind of enjoyable, but it just feels a little unfinished. And kind of I really want like the second part of it, but it doesn't exist yet. It's called Golgotha. It's a story about this man who's he's in a military, and there's a sort of a strike at a mine where the workers are holding some people captive, and he has to basically activate some drones in order to save his life, and they end up killing not only the people that are holding hostage these mine workers, but also a couple of the hostages. And because of it, military has to make an example of him, and they give him two options. They're like, you know, we can either set you out to pasture, or you can take this job piloting this colony, you know, on this colony ship, and basically live out the rest of your life on this colony whenever it arrives at this colony, and everybody that you know is going to be dead by the time you wake up from suspended animation. So he goes with plan B because his family will be taken care of. And he's on this colony ship, and things go wrong. And before it's supposed to land, something happens, ship goes wrong, crash lands. But when it gets to the colony, they were supposed to be like the first colonists, but things got a little accelerated in time and technology got better, and new transportation was developed such that an actual colony ship beat them there, such that his grandson actually is heading up the colony now, because that's how long he was asleep and how long they were traveling in the original ship. And it's kind of an interesting story. This military guy is sent out to investigate this missing archaeologist who found something that that the leader of the colony doesn't want found. And it kind of ends with him going out into the desert. And like I said, it's just so unfinished, but it was compelling enough that I want to read the end. So I hope they make a Golgotha Volume 2 because it's so unfinished.
So how long was that ship in space?
80 years.
So just slightly shorter than it took you to tell that story.
Yes.
Actually, I remember us talking about that one other time, and it does sound like a fun story. I do want to read that one.
Yeah, it's put out by, Top Cow in 2017. So it's been out for a couple of years, so hopefully they're going to make a continuation of it.
I do remember us talking about that one other time, and it does sound good. I'll probably look for that one.
You know, I did read the first one.
What do you think, Dutch? Like it?
It holds an allegory for me that is painful enough where I don't think I would read the second part.
Okay. Gotcha. We have sentimental Josh.
Where the story went.
Yeah, I don't want to go super dark, but it basically says after spending your life in a high amount of risk, you decided to spend the free part of your life in a higher amount of risk. Where bad things happen. And, Yep. Nope. I took a personal fucking hammer to that head, and I'm done with that idea. So the comic just left me, like, staring into space.
I've read a few of those myself. All right, you guys ready for my 3-18?
Do it.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Yeah.
Do it.
So, in the 198, one of my favorite mutants of all time survives. Anybody know who that is?
Leech?
Nope. He's from the Wuhan province. Coincidence? Collective Man. Collective Man, yeah.
I mean, yes, it's a coincidence.
Yeah, it's a coincidence. Yeah, you're right, Josh. It's a coincidence. Absolutely 100%. The only superhero I know of from the Wuhan province, Collective Man, who has a cool superpower.
He does.
He does. He's five brothers. They can combine into one brother with the power of five guys, but when he needs to call the power of China, people in China just start passing the fuck out.
Everyone fucks China.
And one time, everybody in China passes the fuck out, Collective Man runs up and just wails the Hulk. And the Hulk doesn't quite go out. I feel like if it was like 4 days later, if the Chinese had four more days of procreation under their belts,
they would have knocked him out.
They would have knocked the Hulk the fuck out.
They had just dropped that one kid prohibition. Give me 4 weeks.
Give me 4 weeks. I got this.
Hulk, I am knocking you the fuck out.
Just a couple less girl children bored and would have made it.
I feel you. I'm with you right there.
So a scale of 3-18, how cool is the Collective Man? For me,
18.
He's an 18. That's a cool power.
It's a great fucking power.
Yeah. Plus, he also, when he absorbs all these people, he overclocks his brain, too. So he can do more and more stuff with his mind.
Don't side-eye, tilt your head at me, Mike. I can already see it coming.
He's the poor man's multiple man.
No.
He's the reverse of multiple man, which is awesome. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of guys, and we got one guy.
What's it? You give me whatever number you want, Mike. Whatever number you want, Mike. But I guarantee you, at the end of the day, he fucking turns around and knocks you the fuck out anyway.
Kaboom. All right,
I'm going to give him a 14.
Okay, fine. That's good enough for me.
I'll give him a 17 just because he's underutilized.
Yeah.
See? Yeah.
All right. That's good. Now, here's my thing. If the multiple man were Chinese, they'd be the greatest duo of all time because the multiple man can just keep making more multiples. Like, Collective Man can come up and just start wailing on the multiple man.
And it makes sense. Guys... Oh, yeah.
That's what we need.
Fucking fantastic.
Fantastic.
Then you could just throw around the bodies. just yeah. running around.
Speaking of, fun Alex fact, multiple man married to Layla Miller, who was a key part of M-Day because Layla Miller knows things.
She knows shit.
She drinks and she knows things and can't be killed. Kind of.
Kind of.
Josh hates that power. Kind of.
Kind of.
Because it's not really time travel.
Well, kind of.
Kind of time travel.
Kind of
time travel.
It's the most effective use of time travel in X-Men history is Layla Miller. Because she goes through a whole lifetime and then comes back and tells her past self what's going to happen. So Layla Miller just knows shit but never tells anybody why she knows anything. Because some old broad came over and told her everything.
Sometimes when you're going to tell you something, shit.
It is a brilliant use of something I despise. Yeah, I get it. It's sort of that thing where you're like, wow, I hate that, but nice job.
I hate that, but nice job is the name of my last sex tape.
That is creepy as fuck.
I'm creepy. What can I say?
As fuck.
Yeah.
Speaking of creepy. Hey, have you checked out our Patreon only podcast? It's called Geek Leak. And for a mere $1 a month.
Hold on. Are you telling me for the price of a pancake?
$1.
I mean, I don't know where you shop for your pancakes, sir, but yeah, sure. Why not? For the price of a pancake, every week you can get an extra podcast from us where we talk about the things that we've been geeking out about other than comics. So if you love our sweet, sultry tones, go ahead and subscribe. But currently, because of the COVID-19, we are donating everything we get on Patreon. And not only that, we are all matching those funds. So if you would like to donate to a food pantry in the Boston area, that is a great way to get your geek on and also help the hungry. I can't stress enough. Before this happened, 1 in 8 people in America were going hungry. And now there are 19 million new unemployed people. So if you have the opportunity to help out with a few bucks, I say go for it.
I hate to correct you, but it's over 20 million now.
Yeah. Well, then you shouldn't have corrected me.
Yeah. Well, I hate it. Don't hate yourself.
Don't hate yourself. Just don't do it. Food insecurity, of course, is a huge issue right now. If you're lucky enough to still have a job, if you're lucky enough that you're bored, God, we're so lucky that we're a little bored. Oh, my God, this is so rough. I have to watch Netflix. Fuck us. Make sure you give back. Make sure you pay attention to the companies that are doing right by their employees. And make sure that if you're in position to, help out a little bit, for God's sakes. Like, we're all trying to, and we are.
I mean, I have to say, thankfully, Tom, in this world, there are people like you where I actually get to focus my donations on, because otherwise I would just be like, meh, whatever. I wouldn't know where to go. I wouldn't know what to do. And I think the long box guys, as far as the charitable arrow on the spear of our inequity, is Tom. So,
well, it's awful nice of you to say.
So follow that motherfucker wherever you go. Tom says you put money in that place. You put money in that place. So our listeners, like we said before, not only are we donating every dollar we get, every dollar that Patreon manages to give us from our members, every new Patreon member we get during this crisis, we donate an additional $10. That's a 1-to-10 ratio, people. It doesn't get much better than that. Up to the next $1,000.
Right, we have our limits, guys.
Yeah, because we are people with jobs and shit, and we can't do everything. But if we get 100 new Patreon listeners during this ridiculous pandemic, it's another $1,000 to a food pantry in the Boston area to make sure that people get fed and the right people get the food and money they need during this. So do that.
I, I'm the head of this organization now, so I can guarantee you that that money's going to food.
He's the head of the snake. He can't deceive you now. Listen to him. Yeah. It's if you don't listen to him, you'll definitely have to contemplate it on the Tree of Woe. So says the head of the snake cult. So figure it out. Nobody wants to be out there on the Tree of Woe.
Tree of Woe sucks.
Tree of Woe sucks.
Sucks. You got the Tree of Woe.
Whoa. Who wants a woe? She was a woe.
You know why you're on the Tree of Woe, Josh?
No.
Because you kissed a nun.
A nun.
Kissed a nun. All right, let's go over to plugs. We don't have a lot of things coming up. We did put in for New York Comic Con, but who knows?
I think everybody knows.
Yeah. let me do – I can say this, though. Pensacon just posted for their VIP things for next year, and it looks like Pensacon has the best chance of a lot of the cons as being one of the first cons that we go to coming up. Florida's not as hard hit as some areas. That area of Pensacola, Florida, has been spared a lot of the pain. So let's hope for next February in Pensacola better days.
Yeah, and Brian Herring, if you're going back, you know, it's brunch time.
Brunch, baby! Come on, brunch. Man, brunch. You love a nice brunch, you big.
Who doesn't love brunch?
Guy.
Little.
Yeah, it's like breakfast and lunch, but it comes with a slice of grapefruit. It's great.
Yeah.
All right. Let's also plug the Linos, some of our favorite people over at GeekOrthodox.com.
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 Hello, Timmy. Now those guys have baseball hats. Mine's on its way.
What kind of baseball hats are they making?
All kinds.
I haven't
seen these.
My Love Craft Beer. Baseball.
Oh, that's going to be a great baseball hat. I'll get one of those.
Matches my tattoo.
They also got the, all the different fake bands that they have. You can get those on shirt and hat, so that way you can be complete for your fake band.
Yeah.
Cool. And one of the first things that was asked to me as I'm walking through this church is like, yeah, that's a stained glass window. It's been broken for a while, but we don't know anyone who does anything with stained glass. Oh, I know somebody does shit with stained glass.
Yeah.
Are you going to put a Starship Enterprise in that stained glass window of the church?
Yeah. We're not a Catholic organization anymore. We just happen to have a church.
The food pantry, Mike, they're going to put a stained glass window of the replicator up there because we feed the fucking hungry.
Mm. Oh, cornucopia. Boom. Cornucopia.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Go get your bow. And run out to the woods.
Damn right.
Really wait.
How big is the stained glass window?
It's kind of big.
I don't know.
It's kind of big.
Yeah, it's got to be big.
Yeah, it's pretty big. I'm not sure if it's an easy thing.
I think for my if I buy a new house soon, that I'm going to commission them to make a Stilt Man stained glass window for me.
First of all, Mike, I will chip in. Second of all, I will push online until Max Dunbar chips in.
and by the way, every time someone's been doing the I'll draw any three characters, I always put in Stillman now. Yeah. Oh, every single time. And I almost got the guy that did the new Luke Cage one that I really liked. Greenman was his name?
Sanford Green.
Oh. Sanford Green. Nice. Great guy, great artist. He's like, oh, I love Stiltman, but I can't do it this time. I had too many requests for blah, 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 blah. I'm like, fuck blah, blah, blah. Do Stiltman. Come on, man. Come on. Whoa.
Dunbar's in my sights.
You're my sights. You're my head.
I just sent an email to Dan Parent today to get a original Stiltman with Jughead as Stiltman. So it's just going to be Stiltman with a little crown on top.
Crown.
It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be awesome.
Have you guys noticed that Neil Adams has been doing a lot of virtual sales on Facebook?
No.
Well, he has. Wow. Let me do one more quick plug for those of you who are wrestling fans. Tony Atlas's wife recently had a stroke. She's been in the hospital since June. Tony is selling his original artwork on eBay. So if you just go to eBay, Tony Atlas, you'll see some original artwork. He's actually a terrific artist. A lot of people don't know that about Tony, but his artwork is super cool. So if you can like buy maybe one of his smaller pieces or something, take a quick look.
So I lost one of the only auctions I've ever won. I'm not an auction guy online. But I don't know. I think I told you guys the whole the Tick TV show that was on Amazon Prime. They started auctioning off. It didn't get renewed. It's never getting renewed. And they started auctioning off pieces from the set.
What'd you bid on?
I bid on one of the guys, one of the characters is the head of IT for the organization that runs the superheroes. And it's just his badge, like the head of IT badge that he wears to get in the building. I bid 50 on it. I definitely didn't win it. But if you guys, if you did love The Tick, if you did like the series is okay. It's never, none of the live actors have been great. But it was all right. I thought it deserved another chance and another season because I think Ben Edlund was just sort of kind of getting into his groove with the live action thing, but you never know. So
I liked it.
I thought it was good enough to watch, right? Like I don't like I still think Warburton should have not been the producer and still been the Tick. Like he just should have just taken the role and been proud of it. The guy
sorry kid, I got this.
Yeah, like he was okay. The guy who took it was okay. I liked that guy, but it just wasn't enough. So
a little goofy aw shucks image about it, but I liked Warburton's overconfident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it just never makes it. Like the new Tick series never make it. But I did try to take some of the auction items, but not so much.
I've never won on those auctions. You directed me towards that same site when Luke Cage folded, and I tried to get a couple things. I wanted to get the tin can. That would have been great, but that ended up going for like $4,000.
Yeah.
Even napkins from the club went for like $100. I'm like, come on, man. I will use them by mistake at some point. That's happening.
Come on, son.
That is happening for certain. Like, Lane's going to come in, and like the dog's going to shit on the floor. And she's going to grab my stack of $90 napkins and just start pooping up scoops. All right, Mikey.
Yips.
Hey, I'd like to thank Kirby Crackle for providing our Geek Rock music every week. You can go to KirbyCrackleMusic.com to check them out. They are also doing Crackle broadcasts. So if you follow them on Facebook, they do live concerts, and they have guests all the time. Great band. And
yeah,
of course,
you got to flatten the curb.
Yeah.
Flatten the curb.
Speaking of flattening the curb, let's not forget our friends over at WhosNextGaming.com. They are purveyors of all the finest sex robots, gaming, and comic book and movie talk. So go check them out.
I agree.
Yeah.
And one more. I almost forgot. I just got my mask today, my Star Wars face mask from Mouseketeer Trading Company. If you go to look for them on Etsy, good luck, because it's almost impossible to find them. It is.
Mouseketeer, like a tear.
Yeah, but even if you put in Mouseketeer, the Etsy's like, do you mean Mouseketeer with two E's? Or actually, I guess that would be four E's. And I'm like, no, I want it like I spelled it, you son of a bitch. And then every time I press enter, it goes back to the right spelling. And they're like, no, this is what you mean. I'm like, no,
nope.
It's not.
But I have a way around that. I have a way around that, listeners. I didn't go to Etsy first. I put Mouseketeer face mask in my Google search. And Google brought me straight there.
Ah, that's good.
But they also asked me if I thought I was wrong. I'm like, I don't think I'm wrong. Google's like, I trust you. You know what? I like your face. I trust you. If that's what you say, that's what you say.
And if Etsy follows standard search algorithms, you should put that in quotes and not deal with that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure it's true.
Might not work. Might not work.
I just keep on going to Facebook because they have a Facebook page, Mouseketeer Trading Company, and that's how I find the link every time. It's Mouseketeer, but it's spelled E-A-R because you put the mess over your ears. Yeah. That's how you can remember it.
That's right.
That's right.
And Josh, your house, your beautiful, beautiful house, is that your sector this week?
Yeah, yard work was my sector, and it had been so long since I had seen the sun that I forgot about this little thing called sunburn.
Yeah, you are a little red.
A little red. A little red.
And well, everything Jeff, nice weekend.
From here to my wrists, a little red. But yeah. But yeah, great weekend. Loved it.
Great weekend. We got a little bit of sun here in Boston. As everyone knows, COVID hates the sun.
As does Boston.
Yeah. Tommy, sweet, sweet Tommy, do you have any last words for us?
Yeah, I do. I have words that say, you know, Kentucky gets $2.40 for every freaking dollar of debt that it puts into the U.S. government. So let's stop those mooching motherfuckers from let's stop their bailing out their mistakes and get Mitch McConnell out of the fucking Senate, that shit stain. So if Tim, you know somebody that lives in Kentucky, convince him to vote for somebody other than that shit stain Mitch McConnell.
All righty.
Yeah.
Tell us what you really think next time.
Yeah.
Mikey, what's this podcast like to you?
It's like drunk history, but for comics.
Wow, that's well said. My God, I could have jerked that. That was so nicely said. And don't forget what I always say. Don't diss what you hate like Kentucky. Just promote what you love like Massachusetts. And thanks for the long box, guys.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.